Hi, this is the People CDC, a national CDC watchdog and public health advocacy group. We are starting a series of interviews with organizers doing public health advocacy on a local level in different regions across the United States. The point of these interviews is to inspire listeners and readers to take up similar work in their local areas. The first interview of this type is with ACT UP New York and will be released in June of 2026 in honor of New York and National Pride Month. What is your free clinics advocacy campaign, and how long has it been going on?
The Free Clinics campaign seeks to update and rethink how the city's sexual health clinics operate in our new reality of increasing and ongoing deadly pandemics, including HIV, COVID, Mpox, etc. We began the Free Clinics campaign in 2024 after realizing that the city's Department of Health and Mental Hygiene was slowly winding down COVID testing and services in each borough of New York City, and that operating hours at their existing sexual health clinics were not returning to pre-COVID schedules. For decades, the city has operated free sexual health clinics across the city, and they currently operate two clinics in Manhattan, two in Queens, one in Brooklyn, and one in the Bronx. Staten Island does not currently have a clinic. As can be imagined, one or two clinics operating under the best of circumstances, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., in a borough of 1 to 3 million people, cannot begin to scratch the surface of the needs of those without access to regular health care or who are in a health emergency and in need of PEP, HIV testing, abortion services, etc. Add to that fact that during early COVID, clinics reduced hours to close at 3:30 p.m. every day and prioritized patients with appointments while walk-in patients were turned away or made to wait for hours. The clinics have maintained their early COVID operations, now including closing at 3:30 p.m. every day. The problem of clinic overcrowding is so bad that clinics can start turning walk-ins away earlier than 3:30 p.m. because the line is too long and they would never be seen by close. Perhaps the most diabolical aspect of the 3:30 p.m. closing time is that clinics close right as high schoolers are ending their day. So students have little chance of walking in at a clinic outside of their school hours. Under 18 young people are a sexually active, high-risk population that we want to reach with counseling and treatment. And the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene has essentially forgotten them. Also, invariably, one of the sexual clinics is almost always closed by the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene for months for renovations, updates, painting, etc. This usually happens without much or any warning and usually lasts at least 6 months. But most people would never know their clinic is closed until they need services and check online or visit the building where they would be directed to visit another borough that could be 1 to 2 hours away by public transportation. In that situation, that one clinic in the other borough is way overcrowded, trying to fill the needs of two boroughs. We have learned the solution to this is to set up a mobile unit outside the temporarily closed clinic. But we have to fight the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene and advocate for that mobile unit every time a clinic closes.
What goal is this campaign trying to accomplish?
We are tired of the reduced hours, early closures, and reduced geographic coverage at sexual health clinics. 8 million people cannot share six clinics. We are tired of the wind down of free COVID, flu, RSV, PCR testing and treatment services, while the flu and RSV still spread seasonally and while COVID still spreads year round. And we are tired of the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene pitting one type of care against another and asking its constituents to choose who is able to receive care and for what ailment. Our free clinics should be the first line in testing and treatment for any virus that New Yorkers face. Revoking any service that once existed while that virus is still spreading is segregating the option to be treated away from those who have less money. And in this economy, none of us know at what point we will fall into that category. At what point we will either need free care or seek it out, only to realize that our access to treatment has been taken away. Our campaign seeks to reopen the temporarily closed sexual health clinics in Crown Heights, Riverside, and Staten Island to restore the New York City free sexual health clinic system to 9 total locations. Our campaign seeks to extend the hours at all Department of Health and Mental Hygiene sexual health clinics from 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Monday through Friday to 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday to accommodate daytime workers and school-aged teens. Our campaign seeks to resume COVID, flu, RSV, PCR testing, and add it to the menu of the sexual health clinics instead of creating false binaries that pit the availability of these services against one another. Our campaign seeks to introduce gender-affirming care services at each clinic to become the first city-run and city-funded option for gender-affirming care, combating gaps in services due to cuts at a federal level. Our campaign seeks to provide van services to immigrant neighborhoods who are avoiding health services due to targeting by ICE. Our campaign seeks to make the existing abortion hotline into a transgender health navigation plus abortion navigation hotline. Our campaign seeks to provide proper staffing at all clinic locations. At the moment, some clinics, especially in Harlem and the Bronx, are short-staffed and forced to close early. Our campaign seeks to purchase the Manhattan Planned Parenthood location that closed last year before it is sold to luxury developers and institute city-run abortion services to combat the loss in services from what was once a Department of Health and Mental Hygiene service provider. Our campaign seeks to make PrEP continuity of care, a program that pays patients for keeping up with their PrEP regimen, available at all clinic locations. Our campaign seeks to make the Undetectables program, a program that pays HIV positive patients for keeping up with their ART treatment regimen, subsequently maintaining an undetectable viral load, available at all clinics. Our campaign seeks to make medication abortion available at all clinic locations. Our campaign seeks to roll out a citywide KN95 mass distribution program with distribution at sexual health clinics, hospitals, libraries, churches, nonprofits, and subway stations. Wear a mask.
What is the New York City Free Condom Program?
The New York City Free Condom Program gives away millions of free, safer sex products like condoms and lubricant at 1,000 locations throughout the 5 boroughs of New York City. The program is managed by the city's Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. It has been paid for through various funding streams, with an operating budget of around $300,000 in 2019. The program ships safer sex products to bars, shops, community centers, health centers, and churches which enroll for the program through a web portal. The web portal allows everyday New Yorkers to search for condoms, lubricant, etc. by zip code and locate distribution sites near them.
what advocacy contributed to this program being founded.
New York City's free condom program started in 1971, with free condoms distributed through the city's clinics for sexually transmitted infections. In 2005, the program expanded to the internet to provide community and social service organizations with condoms. In 2007, the health department launched the New York City Condom as a way of marketing the program and use of condoms.
Since its founding, have you had to do any maintenance advocacy work to keep it alive?
Despite being over 50 years old and the largest and most successful condom program in the U.S., New York City's free condom program faced its biggest threat during early COVID when service was interrupted for years. During the early stages of COVID, the program virtually shut down when businesses weren't open. In 2023, after businesses had reopened and were seeing more patrons, we started hearing from bar staff that the condom program had not resumed and that the web portal used to order more safer sex products was broken. Until 2023, many businesses assumed that their situation was an anomaly and that it was their own user error or a tech glitch preventing them from ordering supplies. The Department of Health and Mental Hygiene had not sent out any communication about the status of the condom program and the fact that it was halted indefinitely. One ACT UP member who works in bars visited and contacted a number of businesses to put the pieces together that no venue had received condoms since 2020 and that the program had been quietly halted by the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. In early 2024, we reached out to the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene and learned that they have staff paid to administer the free condom program through an outside vendor contracted to run the web portal and deliver the condoms. We met virtually with the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene and learned that the program had been defunded months before, after changes to the way federal funding for the program was awarded. At that time, there seemed to be no plans in the works or desire to find new funding. We essentially pleaded with them how important condoms are to the LGBTQ+ community that is most at risk for HIV, Mpox, and other STDs, especially low-income people without regular access to healthcare. It was a bizarre dynamic for us as community members to have to explain to the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene staff how much the free condom program means to the community and HIV prevention. With June Pride Month only a couple of months away, we offered many stopgap solutions to resume the program, including soliciting donations, enlisting activists to do the legwork, finding a sponsor. But ultimately, the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene was not interested in any of them. We had just begun a social media campaign about the defunded free condom program when at the next meeting with the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, we had arranged follow-up meetings with them until the problem was resolved. They announced that they had found a new source of funding for the condom program and it would resume over the summer. The Department of Health and Mental Hygiene followed through and hired a vendor to fix the web portal and resume delivery of safer sex products to local businesses, health centers, etc. We never learned what the Department of Health Mental Hygiene Condom Program staff were doing while the program was not in operation from 2020 to 2024. That experience was a brutal lesson in how quickly the onset of a newer and concurrent crisis like COVID can be used as an excuse for bureaucratic negligence and indifference that is powerful enough to undermine one of an organization's core missions, in this case, STD prevention through condom distribution.
How are HIV and COVID connected?
HIV and COVID have caused the deaths of millions of people. The Trump administration has defunded HIV and AIDS prevention and treatment services, and it has defunded COVID and long COVID research too. HIV and COVID have both disproportionately impacted minority communities, and misinformation and bigotry has led to these communities being violently targeted and discriminated against in and outside of healthcare settings. Without ACT UP and other AIDS activist groups, we would not have PrEP and PEP. We would not have medication that makes HIV undetectable, and these services would not be available worldwide. Much of the early response to COVID was informed by AIDS activists and experts who understood the nature of infectious diseases better than anybody. Sooner than most, they grasped the enormity of COVID, and many of them expanded their attention from HIV and AIDS prevention to also include COVID prevention. In 2020, AIDS organizations had no funding or grants for COVID, and yet many of them paused what they were doing, covertly redirected existing grants toward this new disease, and worked longer than normal hours to prioritize COVID. Our history has taught us that the government is not going to protect us. We protect us. While ACT UP continues our fight to end AIDS, we also continue to fight for COVID prevention and treatment services like free PCR testing, KN95 mask, vaccines, and antivirals. HIV and AIDS are not over, and neither is COVID.
How do HIV and COVID, or long COVID, affect the transgender community?
HIV positive and transgender people are at higher risk for COVID-19 and long COVID than the general population. Both populations face healthcare access barriers, such as provider discrimination, loss of insurance, and rising costs, as well as racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic disparities that impact their ability to get high quality, affordable, and timely health services. A 2024 report by the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene found that transgender people represented 4% of new HIV infections, with Black and Latinx trans people representing 88% of new infections among trans people in New York City. Compared to the general population, trans and non-binary people are more likely to report long COVID, according to a study by Johns Hopkins. A study from the University of South Carolina found that HIV-positive people had higher rates of long COVID. This may be attributed to chronic immune activation and inflammation, even among those receiving antiretroviral therapy. Long COVID disproportionately impacts people experiencing unfavorable social determinants of health, like HIV positive and transgender people. This is why ACT UP New York is fighting to expand services, locations, and work hours at New York City's free clinics. We need to expand COVID testing, provide free masks, and push our elected officials to enact the New York Health Act. Our current system is not working, and it's up to us to change it.
In what ways do you anticipate the healthcare cuts in the Big Beautiful Bill or Trump's policies in general will affect the HIV positive, HIV at risk, and LGBTQ plus citizens of New York City and nationally?
8% of New Yorkers identify as LGBTQ plus. More than 100,000 New Yorkers are living with HIV, with thousands of positive diagnoses per year, according to New York State data. Any Trump health care cuts, proposed or enacted, will indubitably affect HIV positive, at risk, and LGBTQ plus New Yorkers disproportionately to their counterparts. It already has. Here's how. About a year ago, the House passed the One Big Beautiful Ugly Bill in a vote of 215 to 214 on May 22nd, 2025. The bill prioritizes high-income earners in addition to corporations and families, but absolutely disparages working people with lower incomes. The bill's changes to Medicaid alone could result in as many as 7.6 million Americans losing health insurance, of which 1.8 million are LGBTQ+. And this can happen over the next 10 years, according to initial estimates by the CBO. Instead, funding increases in other departments like the Department of Homeland Security total $190.6 billion through 2029. The Pentagon's $1.5 trillion or 42% increase, and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, more than $70 billion under the DHS total budget. These federal cuts hit New Yorkers particularly hard. 35% of New Yorkers across the state get health care through Medicaid, one of the highest shares of any state in the country, according to an analysis by New York Comptroller Brad Lander. Additionally, proposed federal cuts would impact over 4 million New Yorkers on Medicaid and nearly 3 million New Yorkers on SNAP. As we see the effects of Trump's cuts to LGBTQ+ and HIV-positive or at-risk New Yorkers, Health and Human Service Secretary RFK Jr. testified on April 21, 2026 before Congress to explain a projected 12.5%, $15.8 billion budget cut requested to Health and Human Service. With rising costs, flat funding to HHS, in addition to $1.5 billion in proposed cuts to HIV prevention and related public health services, the administration's priorities couldn't be clearer. Due to continued flat funding of integral public health programs like the Health Resources and Services Administration, the Ryan White Program Part B, the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, is drying up in states like Florida, Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, and 19 other states, leaving people without medication they cannot risk missing a single dose of, or find the HIV virus mutating, immunizing itself from life-saving medication while wasting money from global health initiatives like ending the HIV epidemic. All this and transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people disproportionately affected by HIV cannot access healthcare as they could prior to Trump's presidency. Since returning to office, Trump has had an all-out war on trans New Yorkers, issuing executive orders that threaten weaponization of federal funds for an end to gender-affirming care for minors and adults 19 years of age. This has led to refusals in care at major hospital systems like Mount Sinai, New York Presbyterian, or NYU Langone, which was this month issued a grand jury subpoena from the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Northern District of Texas. People laud New York for its healthcare system, but today it faces unprecedented threats from an administration who clearly doesn't see HIV-positive, at-risk communities and LGBTQ people as human enough to keep healthy. That is why we need the extra $30.5 million added to the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene budget this year. That is why we need the New York Health Act. That is why we need to tax the rich. We need free New York City clinics to serve those in New York and throughout the country who cannot rely on the federal government nor insurance companies to provide the necessary health care they need and deserve.
In what ways does your advocacy work to future-proof against the harms that these cuts will cause, i.e. people losing healthcare coverage, transgender youth losing access to gender-affirming care, and immigrant populations losing access to health services due to ICE intimidation?
When people's rights and access to healthcare are protected at the city and state level, it becomes harder to take away access at the federal level. We have been advocating for the New York Health Act because not only would it provide healthcare coverage for everyone, but everything would be included. Not only that, the NYHA is popular. Democratic support is at 79%, union support is 72%, and total overall support is at 68%, according to Physicians for a National Health Program, New York Metro Chapter, Siena polling data. The NYHA will help all New Yorkers, regardless of employment status. Trans people, especially youth, would be able to access gender-affirming care. Immigrant populations wouldn't have to worry about ICE intimidation. People wouldn't have to worry about losing their health care coverage or whether a doctor was in-network. No matter what the federal government did, all of these people would be covered. This also relates directly to our work with the sexual health clinics in New York City. Currently, these clinics provide, at low to no cost, STI testing and treatment services, and some of them provide PrEP, PEP, DoxyPEP, vaccinations, reproductive health services, and medication abortion services. But the clinics are underutilized, underfunded, and under-advertised. Everything these clinics provide is a vital service, especially at a time when so much of what they do is under attack at the federal level. If the health department were to make these clinics a greater priority, they could fill the gaps that are being left by federal funding cuts.
For people outside of New York City looking to advocate for the strengthening or the start of a free clinic system, a free condom program, gender-affirming care, or a free KN95 mask program in their areas, what should their first step be? What advice would you give them?
Advice to start a free clinic program starts with building relationships in all levels of government, from your city council person to your state legislators. From there, you pay attention to the budget. Where is the money going? Where is it stagnating? What areas in your locale are suffering from lack of funding or closures? Answering these questions can help to landscape a starting point. It is helpful to do this kind of work in a group to be divided by district. This helps build a coalition for momentum building around public health campaigns like this, and also brings neighboring districts together for healthier communities. However, this is not just about political organizing, but engaging communities who are in need of healthcare with on-the-ground resources to promote public health. For instance, ACT UP New York organizes the health fair each and every Pride Month since 2021 to bring PPE, immunizations, testing, and healthcare consultation to the people. This encourages the sharing of resources, information, and steps to guide people to New York City clinics that address their healthcare needs, but it also shows local political leaders that there's a tremendous need that is not being addressed to the best of its ability. This is why the present and the past of public health should inform the future. The health fair is currently set at Judson Memorial Church on Thompson Street. The church was one of the first places in the mid-1980s that allowed people with AIDS, their families, and activists to gather to honor those who passed away from AIDS. Today, it's the site of what we want New York to become, a leader in advancing health care for all. It takes a few approaches at the same time. Talk to your legislators, but also in the meantime, provide the services that you can to your neighborhood by yourself. The best thing you can hope for is that when you pitch an idea to the city that you're already doing, the officials will steal it and pretend they came up with it. If they tell you it's impossible, ask for exact numbers of what it would cost and then fundraise it for them. Or just start doing it and ask them to help to expand the program you started with mutual aid. It's always possible.
Again, this has been the People CDC, a national CDC watchdog and public health advocacy group. Thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for future interviews with more local advocacy groups.